speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer.
Amen.
It's Friday morning, a sunny but still bitterly cold morning. From my desk, I look out on a panorama of the houses and streets that from North Main Street climb College Hill to its apex, crowned by the impressive verdigris dome of the Christian Science Church. I always think that this classical architecture is an odd choice for a Christian Science Church, yet like a great classical cathedral, its dome dominates the horizon. On this particular Friday morning, I'm struggling to clear my head from the fog of the head cold currently doing the rounds that has laid me low since the previous Sunday. I'm daydreaming, casting around for inspiration to take me into a spiritual riff on the lectionary lessons for today. This Friday morning, the feeling is familiar. The tension between despair at the task that lies ahead of me and curiosity that stimulates my imagination. Sooner or later, it will provide the hook for my fresh engagement with the text for the day. Genesis 45 and Luke 6 address the tension between the golden rule of do unto others as you would have them do unto you and the law of retaliation, do unto others as they have done to you. A distinction lies in the inclusion or the absence of four words that, insignificant in themselves, have the power to determine the course towards the promise of liberation from the endless repetition of the cycles of victimization and retaliation in individual and wider social relations. From general observation, we can often see themes that connect the Old Testament and the Gospel texts, which alert us to the particularity of God's timely invitation. Between the Old Testament and the Gospel teaching, we find old themes re-emphasized and given new impetus. The experience of victimization, whether real or imagined, fosters the illusion that retaliation will provide satisfaction for past injury. This is the theme of the story of Joseph and his brothers, and the teaching of Jesus in Luke's Sermon on the Plain. And it's a very timely message, speaking into the dilemmas of the current time. Joseph becomes an exemplar of the power of love, interpreted as the desire for reconciliation, to triumph over the impulse for retaliation. Joseph has every reason to hate his brothers for what they have done to him. His brothers have every reason to fear his desire for revenge. Yet having moved beyond his experience of being a victim allows Joseph to choose reconciliation over retaliation, thus breaking out of the repetitive cycle of victimization and retribution. Yet The story of Joseph and his brothers is nevertheless an ironic tale. At the heart of the story lies the irony that it's harder to be forgiven than to be punished for wrongdoing. The brothers are astonished and relieved at having escaped Joseph's retaliation. But this is not enough to free them from their expectation of retaliation. If not now, then later. Although they are seemingly forgiven, they're still left with the memory of having narrowly avoided murdering their brother by selling him into slavery and deceiving their father with the lie of Joseph's death in the claws and the jaws of a lion. Until the end of the Joseph story, they remain in the grip of the expectation that revenge is the only response open to the victim. Proof that being the recipient of mercy is, as Proverbs 25 says, akin to having hot coals poured upon your head. Jesus asks us to love our enemies. If you go to the website and you see the text of the sermon for today, you'll notice that there's a cartoon at the head of it, which shows Jesus sitting on a rock and a number of people gathered around him. And out of Jesus' mouth, the balloon says, "Love your enemies." And the balloons coming out of the listeners, as they look rather puzzled to one another, is, "Surely he doesn't mean the Romans." Because love your enemies is a very unsatisfying teaching. Do good to those who hate us. Jesus encourages us to turn the other cheek and be self-sacrificial in our generosity, even at the risk of considerable personal cost. He asks these things of us not because it's the nice Christian thing to do. It's not about scoring some secret up-one-manship. Jesus is not exhorting us to the practice of pious masochism that sentimentalizes turn the other cheek as the ultimate expression of passivity. He's showing us that this is the only way to step out of the cycle of victimization and retaliatory violence. James Breach, writing in his book, The Silence of Jesus, says, "Do good, Jesus says, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you, and watch what happens." This is the recipe for destroying the little bundle of lies about myself and my society that came into existence the moment my tribe and I found someone to hate. Following this injunction is not just a nice thing to do. It's a matter of destroying the whole system of mystification which has been the womb in which we've lived and moved and had our social existence. Love your enemies is the recipe for destroying the whole system of mystification, by which is meant the hatred of the other that forms the womb in which, to quote Augustine, we live and move and have our being. That is the culture of victimhood and retribution that permeates our social existence. Now, these days, many of us witnessing a severe attack on the constitutional balance of power and a seemingly unstoppable descent into transactional authoritarianism view with alarm and distress the developments that are taking place, not just in our own country, but in the wider world. And it raises the question for many of us, what does resistance look like? What does resistance look like within the context of this teaching? Love your enemies and do good to those who hate you. Now, of course, the unpalatable answer. Unpalatable because it feels so unsatisfying and so ineffectual. Is Christian resistance. It means resistance shaped by Jesus' teaching to love your enemies as the only way of breaking the cycle of victimization and retaliation, by which hatred of the other forms the womb in which we live and move and have our being. Jesus calls us to follow him, to live lives well lived as the response to living under the weight of coercive regimes. Jesus calls us to embrace the power of exemplary action undertaken by ordinary people, as opposed to fantasizing grand schemes of formal political action. He calls us to the resistance of the heart, the refusal to be co-opted by feelings of powerlessness into a response of compliance and passivity. His teaching is a warning against the alternative of meeting violence with even more violence. In addition to legitimate steps of political and legal protest, Jesus calls us to love our enemies as a reminder. There are no small acts of resistance. Any act by anyone has the potential of reverberating, of being absorbed, replicated, leading to meaningful change. Translated into our current political context, Jesus calls us to love our enemies as the primary form of effective resistance, requiring us to undergo a transformation of the heart. This alone breaks the cycle of victimization and retaliation, the cycle of repetitive violence that has captured our social consciousness. In effect, when we cease seeing ourselves as victims, we not only take back our power, but we also break the grip that the desire for retaliation holds over us. If you are abused and you do not respond, what more can be done by the abuser? At the deepest level, Jesus is asking us to give up being afraid, to give up seeing ourselves as helpless victims, and in the words of the late John O'Donohue, to have the courage to live today the life that we would love and waste our hearts on fear no more. Amen.